listener production. This is Global Truths with Dr. Keith Suter. Join us every week as we break down an issue in global politics so that you can understand what is going on in the world right now and what is likely to happen in the future. Our host, Dr. Keith Suter, is one of Australia's leading commentators on global affairs and geopolitics. My name is Sasha Barbagat. I'm a journalist. The memory of the January 6 Capitol riots in Washington lives on in the memories of people around the world. And now there are fears of similar violence erupting in the November midterm elections in the US. Keith, before we look into those concerns, could you first explain what the vote is for this November for people who might not have a strong understanding of US elections and politics?
Yeah, so the United States has a system of set election dates, different from what we have here in Australia, where in a parliamentary system, the way we operate, government can go to an election whenever it thinks it's going to win. But say, you know, we are obliged to call it early or whatever. And in fact, in Great Britain in 1935, there was a general election. And in those days, they had general elections every 5 years. But then World War II came along. In 1940, Britain was at war. And every year, the Parliament passed an act giving itself another year in office. Mm. So the British went for a decade without having to have an election, whereas by contrast, the Americans and also the Australians held elections during World War II. Mm-hmm. And of course, for Australians, it's compulsory voting. So while you're being shot at by the Japanese, you also had to get to the polling station.
Were they sending ballots to the soldiers?
Yeah, in Papua New Guinea and whatever.
Wow.
Yes, yeah.
I had no idea. There you go.
So the United States has this very rigid system that we know decades in advance when the elections are going to take place. So if you look at someone like the Kennedy dynasty, Ambassador Joseph Kennedy, who was planning to get his son elected, that's John Kennedy, getting his son elected, was able to plan years in advance to map out the election strategy. So every 4 years, you have the election of the president. The only change there has actually been the inauguration ceremony. So the election takes place in November. The inauguration is now in January. Previously, it was in March.
Right.
Because it used to take 4 months for the wagon carrying the president's personal possessions to move across the country to get to Washington, D.C.
Yep.
Now, in the 20th century, in the 1930s, they'd invented trains and railways, et cetera. And so they were able to move the president into office with the family more early. So the Constitution was amended to provide for the inauguration of the president in January. But otherwise, every 4 years, we get a president up for election. And then you get the midterms, which means the middle of the presidential term. So that'll be 2 years. So you get the president elected, then 2 years later, you get the midterm elections, which is what we're going to have shortly.
Yes.
And then in another 2 years from now, we will have the general election or presidential election. The midterm elections see all the lower house standing for re-election.
Okay.
Right. So in Australia, we do that every 3 years. In Great Britain, they do it every five. In the United States, it's every 2 years. The reasoning being that if you're up for election every 2 years, it forces you as a member of the lower house to keep in touch with your voters.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get too far away from the voters.
Yep,
otherwise, they're not going to re-elect you. And so you get all the lower house up for election and you get about one third of the Senate. If you're a senator, you have 6 years in office.
Mm-hmm.
So every 2 years, a third stand down to be re-elected or retire or whatever.
Right.
So the midterm elections are important. And traditionally in American politics, the midterm vote tends to go against the governing party.
Mm-hmm.
So the Americans move back and forth. It's very weird.
Right.
Right. So the Americans elect a president. In this case, it's Biden. And then in 2 years' time, the Democrats, who have been able to get control of the lower house to a certain extent and the upper house to a certain extent, the Democrats will lose support.
Mm.
And it works the other way around as well.
Right.
Right. So if it's a Republican in the White House, he or eventually she will be able to bring in members of Congress or senators in their presidential election.
Right.
But then 2 years later, because
oh, God,
they've disappointed the voters, you'll have members of that political party not getting re-elected. So that's the movement in the United States. It's sort of constant. And also this tendency not to give a party more than two terms in office in the White House.
Yes.
Every 8 years, you tend to get a new president coming through. In the case, of course, last time, Trump only had one term, which is what he's resentful about because he figures that he was cheated out of that. This is the big lie that dominates American politics at the moment. So that's the background to the election. It's very significant because it means that in the midterm elections in a few weeks' time, although the winners won't actually be sworn in until January, but in the elections that will take place in a few weeks' time, we assume that Biden will lose support in the Senate and the lower house.
Mm.
And if the Republicans can get back control, then they may well decide to have an impeachment of President Biden for so-called stealing.
I think I'm getting deja vu.
The previous election. Well, I think that the problem is that if you look back over the history of impeachment, you wouldn't even use the phrase. We had one impeachment trial in the 19th century.
Mm.
And then in the 20th century, the Americans started getting quite addicted to it.
Mm.
And of course, you've had President Trump, who's been impeached twice. So I think there is now much more of an appetite for impeachment than they would have had back in the 19th century. So that is certainly a change, and it's going to be very disruptive.
Yeah, and the outcome of these elections will have an impact on the current state of play of US politics, won't it, in terms of decision-making and hot-button issues?
Absolutely, and it'll show the extent to which there is support for Trump. Trump sucks the oxygen out of the atmosphere. He is still the most popular or most notorious politician in the United States, and he is running on a certain number of issues, probably personally not greatly committed to them. You know, he's never had a strong view about abortion, but he suddenly realises that abortion is a good way to trigger the right,
bring him
in on your side. And so, yes, we will get a clear idea of the extent to which the United States body politic has moved well out to the right. So traditionally speaking, and Richard Nixon set this out decades ago, what you do is that in your primary campaign, where the only people who can vote are registered members of your party, in his case, the Republican Party, you move right out to the extreme, which the Republican Party was the right wing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you move out there to garner support, so you then become the candidate in the midterm election or the general election, depending on the election cycle. So you then move towards the middle for the crucial vote.
Gotcha.
And then you try to draw people in from the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's going to be interesting is that Trump is following the rule book. You know, he's gone right out to the right, or certainly some of his candidates like Marjorie Taylor Greene, et cetera.
Mm.
Now, they're going to have to move, presumably, into the centre, or else they're not going to get some of the moderate people. And it is quite interesting how the electorate in the United States is changing. The Republicans are now getting more black voters and more Latina voters.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
For me, it's a really interesting change. In all this economic turmoil, you've got an emerging black middle class.
Yeah.
And so they are the ones who are saying, well, we've got to vote Republican. We've got to protect our property interests.
That's right. Yeah.
So they're moving over. Same with some of the voters that have come in from Latin America. They also can see that they need to vote for the Republicans.
Mm. Now, I understand this article you sent me this week calls for violence and civil war are gaining traction online in the lead up to the November midterms. Do you think Americans have been emboldened by the January 6 riots for this kind of response to a vote to an election?
Yes, I think so. And what we're looking at is something which would have seemed inconceivable a few years ago, namely storming the Capitol to prevent the formal notification of the election of Joe Biden.
Mm.
The idea of that being stormed would have been not on anybody's radar.
Yeah, inconceivable.
And so there is this idea of the window in political science. So at any one time, an idea is either acceptable or unacceptable, but the window moves.
Mm.
So something which was previously acceptable, such as, I don't know, racist language, then becomes unacceptable as the window changes.
Right.
And then vice versa. And what we're seeing now is just this use of violence and the intemperate language, which I think has been fueled partly by social media. You know, people are complaining about the way in which people go down rabbit holes in social media. There's not the exposure to the wide variety of viewpoints that you used to be able to get. You're living lives in echo chambers, both on the left and the right. And this is then adding to this notion of violence. And you're right, we're getting this more and more talk about civil war. hard to imagine. Civil War ended in 1865. It's going to be different this time around because the Civil War clearly had a geographic boundary. You had the slave-owning states in the South. You had the Republican Party, by the way. They were the Democrats down in the South owning slaves, right?
Yep.
Up in the North, you had these radical Republicans who had factories. They didn't have need for slave labor. They were employing workers, but paying them low wages. But it meant the workers went home and they had to look after their own accommodation. The problem with the slave is you've got to house them.
Yes.
There was a clear geographical separation. We talk about the Old South, and then we have the Yankees up in the North, particularly around New England. This time around, the battle lines are not clear. We obviously can see different political points of view, but they're not specifically just in a particular state any one time. You know, we make the distinction between red and blue states. So Massachusetts, the state with which I'm most associated, is clearly a blue state, as is California. So they're out on the left. And then you have the conservative ones, which are red. But you've got an awful lot of purple states.
Purple, mixed, yeah. It's like purple,
purple,
mixed
a blending
together.
Of both the red and the blue, because you've got people who may not talk to each other and parents who will not allow their children to marry people associated with other political parties, but that they're not living geographically separate each other.
Yeah. And so I guess that's where a lot of this rhetoric kind of bubbles up from, is that people are putting it on social media and that's how they're connecting with people who are, you know, in a red state and a blue state, and they're coming together and going, well, what about this?
Absolutely. So in the old days, you would have been limited because the New York Times would be very careful about what it published, or the big TV companies or radio stations. Now it's different.
Yeah.
Anybody can publish their views via social media.
You are listening to Global Truths with Dr. Keith Suter. This week we're discussing the potential of election-related violence in the US midterm elections. Now, has there been a response to these fears by election authorities? Are they doing anything?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I might just say that the article that we're looking at is by the Sufane Center in the United States, ironically set up to deal with terrorism.
Right. There
mainly
you go.
The Islamic State and Al-Qaeda. And now here they are actually having to turn the spotlight on the United States rather than Afghanistan and Iraq. And so what they're looking at is the way in which people who organize elections are having to protect election workers. Again, a bit of contrast here. Australia has the world's benchmark in terms of electioneering. Right, in the actual holding of elections. Now, we still have duds and crooks running for parliament, but the mechanism by which they get into parliament is world's best practice.
Yes.
So, and in fact, the thing like the secret ballot, for example, is overseas is called the Australian ballot.
And there you go.
Because it's invented in Australia.
Look at us go.
So we've got the world's best practice. The United States does not have an equivalent of our National Electoral Commission. So things vary from one state to the next. What we're seeing is at state or county level, people trying to strike others off the electoral roll. And so people will turn up at a polling station and find, oh, sorry, you're no longer listed.
Wow, how does that even happen?
So that generates anger.
Yeah.
And the people who are being particularly targeted are blacks and they tend to be on the left, right? Mm-hmm. So what we're seeing then is this rising level of anger against people who actually operate the electoral system. And I was interested to see that election sites and offices are in the process of hardening formerly soft targets. That's an expression we use when we talk about terrorism, right?
That's
soft
right.
targets.
Yeah.
It's the sort of thing you'd normally see in conflict zones. What they're looking at are election workers receiving active shooter training. Just blows the mind,
honestly,
isn't it? How to respond if somebody bursts into your election station and then starts shooting people. Because you've had election sites and offices in the process of just becoming much more secure sites. It's almost becoming like an airport.
Yeah, hiring security guards is another one I saw. Installing bulletproof and bomb-resistant glass. So is the idea that the thing that they're worried about is that you know, we saw January 6th was on such a solid platform of this is the Capitol building, this is for all Americans. Is the concern here more that it'll be localized violence? Is that the concern?
In the first instance, but don't forget, in January of next year, we will be having the swearing in.
Right.
And so again,
go
there is the risk
Capitol.
To the Capitol building. But the first round of potential violence will be in November at these midterm elections.
Mm.
And so they're trying to make them as safe as possible, because otherwise there might be some people who will say, I'm not going to risk wanting to go.
That's right.
Well, that's also part of the disenfranchisement process, because they're trying to shut down opportunities for postal voting.
Are we seeing similarities to the rhetoric being used during the January 6 riots now among those groups that are a risk of starting violence? Are they kind of saying the same things online that they were then?
I think that some of the rhetoric has changed a little. It's still very angry. And now they've got this idea of the stolen election, which really mobilises them. It's worth bearing in mind that over 900 individuals have been charged in relation to that January 6th. So there are a number of people who maybe are no longer on the streets, no longer able to be active because they're behind bars or whatever. So it certainly is a very interesting development. As I say, the United States advertises itself internationally as the great democracy, even though it prefers to call itself the great republic, but it still talks about democratic values. So we're getting that all the time from Secretary of State Blinken. And yet when you actually look at how the elections are held in the United States, there is this undertone of violence. And now if you're going to make election centres a bit like airports, then it gives the impression that simply voting is becoming a risky profession, much as one sees in Afghanistan.
And have the Capitol riots set a new precedent in this space? Like you said, it was inconceivable, you know, before it happened. Is this where politics is moving to in the US?
Well, I think it is certainly moving to it. There is this rising anger and this disappointment with the way in which the election system is operating. So you've got issues like abortion, immigration, COVID-19, vaccines, election integrity, inflation. So they've all raised the temperature of an already very tense party political atmosphere. So you've had a number of issues that are adding to this, and so pushing the United States beyond boiling point. And as I say, this idea of the window in politics means that we're now talking about issues that would have been inconceivable just a few years ago. Not even the 1960s. I lived through the race riots in the United States. Not even then do we have anybody talking about storming the White House.
No.
And the White House itself, as a physical building, prides itself on having a very low level fence. And that's now had to be changed. But for centuries, they had a very low level ordinary fence that you could see through and climb over more easily.
Yeah.
Very different from if you go down to see the Prime Minister's residence in Canberra. There's this huge wall around it.
Yeah.
So in America, this idea of openness and transparency was all part of this thinking that we are the great democracy. And now, tragically, they're on the brink of this election chaos. It's going to be a very worrying few weeks. And as I say, if the Democrats do badly in November, then you can expect 2 years of turmoil as they try to get Biden impeached. They'll be unsuccessful, but they will suck a lot of energy out of the US political system dealing with the impeachment process.
Mm.
And meanwhile, of course, you've still got the original inquiry relating to the January 6th riots and the calling of President Trump to give evidence and the recommendations flowing from it. Remember, a number of people have already gone to jail.
That's right.
And the big question is, will the Department of Justice in the end go after President Trump? Because the way in which they're operating, the congressional inquiry, it's a bit like how you go after a mob boss.
Right.
In other words, you deal with the lower levels and then you then gradually work to the person at the top.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what they're doing with Donald Trump.
I guess the way to describe voters in the US at the moment is so emotionally charged. There's so much emotion involved. Is this the new normal, or is there an end in sight to this kind of attitude to politics?
Nothing in politics ever goes on continuously. As we've explored before, the general public lose interest in issues. What's called issue salience declines over a period of time. And so my guess is that eventually this will burn itself out. But then where it will be when it does burn itself out, who knows?
Right. So it's a wait and see game.
Wait and see game.
Thanks for your points today, Keith. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Global Truths is presented by Dr. Keith Suter and me, Sasha Barber-Gatt. Audio production by Niall Fernandez. Theme and original music by Matt Nikolic. Listener.